Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Talking a little NCAA tournament. And to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing well.
Are you going to Oklahoma City? Or if so, how excited are you that Joe's going to be there too? I just looked some things up. There's a couple Cracker Barrels there, so that's good. How are we feeling about Oklahoma City?
Maybe not my first choice, but hey, it does help that that Joe's going to be there. I thought about that when they sent Vandy to OKC. It's not the worst place. I've been there for a Women's College World Series before. They do a good job with that event. So probably out of the eight, it wasn't the worst. Maybe not the best either.
It's going to be 95 this weekend, Gentry. 95 in OKC.
Well, good thing the games are indoors, I guess.
That is true.
Yeah, it'll be 52 in the arena.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Probably get sick.
That'll be nice. So, Gentry, let's start on the Vanderbilt front. They punched their ticket to the SEC championship game this weekend, taking down Tennessee and Florida in the process. So, obviously, very impressive there. They fall short to Arkansas yesterday, and they end up as the number five seed. So what do you make of Vanderbilt as a five seed, which I think took a lot of people by surprise in the aftermath of that this weekend?
I thought they were underseeded, and I think it does lend a lot to the idea of they set this bracket days in advance and they don't mess with it. I don't really see there's any other way to look at this. When you look at all the numbers and the metrics and everything else that's supposed to be taken into account here, Vanderbilt, you could make a case, was ahead of all four teams that got a four. You could say a lot. You say it's name recognition. You could say any one of the, but I think really what it is they didn't really factor in these last few wins over Florida and last win over Tennessee and win over Florida. And I know every year people complain one D-line or another, but this is a big deal. When you look at the difference in Vanderbilt's matchup versus Nebraska, who's right next to them in the bracket, McNeese is in the 60s in KenPom. Troy is like 130, 140 something. So the level of difficulty that Vanderbilt's playing versus Nebraska in the first round game is extreme from four to five, and that's how important this can be.
Well, yeah, I agree on the first game. Now, I do like their – I think their draw, potential draw after that is better than it could be. I mean, you look around, I don't think it's terrible. But I will argue with it, Gentry, because I understand what you're saying there. It seems that way. But, like, in the Big Ten, they absolutely had a contingency bracket and flipped it when Michigan State was going to be a two-seed. Purdue beats Michigan. They jumped up from the 11 to the 8. I mean, he laid it out for us yesterday. Keith Gill did. So, it doesn't make sense that, like, so in the SEC, they didn't take anything into account. I mean, I don't think that's the explanation. I mean, I don't know what the explanation is. I said it earlier. There is the one seed line wiggle room to make the bracket fit. That does happen some years. I don't know why in particular, like, this would necessarily do that. But, I mean, to me, I thought – they should have been a four. They're a five. It's a one seed line difference. So I guess it's like, and this is the most egregious one, I think, of the whole bracket. So I guess in terms of that, like, it's not crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have an explanation. The numbers say that some of these fours should be behind them. Maybe the non-league hurt them some. I mean, that's one thing that Keith Gill said yesterday when Myron Medcalf asked us. He said it's total body work. And I thought back to, like, you know, their non-league strength of schedule wasn't very good. But, like, I mean, I'm with you. I think we all agree. Like, the Florida win, to me, should have cemented them as a four.
Well, a couple of things to that. I mean, Vanderbilt's non-league. It wasn't as strong as some other teams because they didn't play in the players' era and all these big-time neutral site games that other teams had. But they beat St. Mary's by, I think, 25 points.
Yeah.
VCU was on there. UCF was on there. There were teams that got in this tournament. Vanderbilt's schedule ended up looking stronger than I think it would have before the season. And also, you mentioned the Big Ten, but I'll throw you St. John's. That team's better than a five. St. John's and Vanderbilt as fives to me were the ones that I rejected probably the most over, let's say, Kansas and Alabama.
Yeah, St. John's gets screwed by the Big East being trash this year. But I agree. They're definitely better than that.
So on the Tennessee front, Gentry, they end up as a sixth seed. It's the lowest seed they've been under Rick Barnes. You've got Ament getting back in there over the weekend and getting healthy, so that part of it's good. I said it earlier in the show, I'll be surprised if they get out of the first weekend. That's just me. What do you make of Tennessee and the path now in front of them as a sixth seed?
You know, the first round, I think they could potentially have the easiest first round. If Miami of Ohio happens to get in, you know, play in that first game in Dayton, if they happen to get in there opposite Tennessee, I absolutely love that matchup for Tennessee. I think they may be playing they were playing by far the weakest at large, in my opinion. I get it. I understand how they get in the field, but I think that's a pretty good matchup for Tennessee. And I don't think Virginia would be unbeatable in the second game. I know a lot of people really don't like Tennessee's draw, but I saw Virginia played an exhibition at Vandy right before the season. You know, and you could tell then that Virginia had some players and they were going to have a pretty good season, you know. But Vandy beat them. That was the first indication, I think, you saw that Vanderbilt was going to have a pretty good team. And I don't necessarily think Tennessee is in a match. I don't think that's a team that's going to overwhelm Tennessee. And, you know, I think they could play the kind of game they want to play against a team like Virginia. So I feel like – I don't hate Tennessee's draw, but they obviously Nate Amendola's the key. I mean, can you get him going in on 2 days rest? Because I think it was kind of alarming against Vanderbilt that it clearly he was not the same player against Vanderbilt that he was against Auburn, and you wondered, was it just soreness? Was it something more going on? You know, so that to me is obviously the biggest question. And then the second biggest question is, if he's not scoring, then who is?
Yeah, no, that's the thing with them. It's like, I mean, I think that, you know, Gillespie is going to get his shots, and I think he'll play well. And I think Ament will certainly play well. They might need him to be Superman, you know, to win some of these games. But who is the third guy for Tennessee who can give them some kind of offense, give them some kind of option if a team's able to, you know, to take those two out of the game, or at least limit those two guys? If you had to say someone, who would it be?
Who'd you say the second was?
Well, Gillespie and Ament.
I would definitely say Estrella was the third one. I would agree with you on that, Joe. You mentioned that a while. And,
yeah.
And he's one that I've kind of thought all season – you know, if they get him going, he has the ability to create his own shot. He's got good when he gets the ball on the low post and he's able to be able to get his looks. He can score, and I feel like if he could step up and be more of an option for them consistently than I think he has been for a lot of this season. But otherwise, and you got Amari Evans too, and that was a strange aspect to me of that Vanderbilt game in the SEC tournament. You know, you're talking about a guy who played wonderfully against Vanderbilt in Knoxville, kind of kept him in the game.
Yeah.
And then we barely even saw him at Bridgestone, so I don't know why that was.
Yeah, you're right. He's when he's aggressive, gets to the hole, I mean, he can help them. I still don't trust him ever pulling up for a jump shot, but he would definitely be a guy who could be key here moving forward too.
So Gentry, on the Titans front, as we kind of wrap this up here, what do you make of what they've done in free agency? How much of a needle mover has it been for you in terms of how you view their roster?
I mean, they're obviously better. I think you're in a situation where it's interesting to me because you have a GM and Mike Borgonzi who came in very much along the we're going to draft and develop, we're going to be patient, we're going to be disciplined in a lot of the moves. And it's just a lesson that you give any GM in that league, that much cap space and a 3-14 team. And yeah, he's going to go buy a bunch of players. And he should have. That was the right thing to do. There are obviously a lot of holes on the roster. I don't think this they did anything in free agency that where you drastically look at this and say, gosh, you know, they're going to be really good now. I mean, I don't think that was ever realistic. But they did check a lot of boxes, and they were very active in some areas that they needed to be, most notably in the defensive backfield. So I also like bringing Calvin Ridley back. I know, you know, everybody had kind of written him off over the course of this offseason. It just seemed to become a given that he wasn't going to be back, and that I never understood that. I did with L'Jarius Sneed. I agreed with that. That he wasn't going to be back. But I never saw, I was like, why wouldn't they bring Ridley back? And if they were able to do it at a discount and apparently they worked out something, I think that's a sneaky good move for the Titans if they're able to give him some help and make him. I think Calvin Ridley still could be an awfully good number two, but it's just he hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he also hasn't been the number one that the Titans have been paying him to be, but that doesn't mean he's a bad player.
I've also looked it up, Gentry. There's a few Waffle Houses in Oklahoma City as well. So you and Joe should be in good shape this weekend. I think you're going to be fine. Cracker Barrel Waffle House should be fine.
As somebody who spends 2 weeks every June in Omaha, it'll be fine. We'll find lots of steak.
We'll find a side of beef, a little touch of gout. It'll be fine.
I was about to say, Gentry may need to police this a little bit. We can't be having a gout episode in Oklahoma City.
He'll have the baked chicken. Order for me.
I will say, though, as somebody who spent most of February in the Alps in Italy, where it was about 10 degrees a lot of the time, I challenge anyone to have that much of a contrast from 1 month to another.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
No doubt.
Going from 10 to 95. Gentry, have a great time in OKC. Thank you for being with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Joe Rexroad's travel buddy coming up this weekend. We'll react to what Gentry had to say. Big game for the Predators last night. Not the result that they were looking for. We will get into that. Coming up next, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
A lot of people are asking about the gout.
Robbie and Rexroad here on 102.5 The Game, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So, Joe's a big game yesterday for the Preds, taking on Edmonton on the road, and it did not go well for them. They lose 3-1 last night to the Oilers. Draisaitl scored early in the game, and then Weisblatt with a check on Draisaitl knocked him out of the game. Doesn't sound like Draisaitl is going to be out for any length of time, but knocked him out of the game. Connor McDavid, ho-hum, 3 assists last night for Edmonton against Nashville, and you lose the game. So, you know, they had a big win last week against Seattle to pull within one of a playoff spot. And then you follow it up with blowing a 3-1 lead against Vancouver. You lose in overtime at that point. And now you've lost to Edmonton, and now you're back down to 4. So you're 4 points out of that final wild card spot. Seattle's at 71 points. They got a win against Florida yesterday. You got San Jose in front of you. You got LA in front of you. So you're still basically, Joe, right where they've been. They've been unable to gain any traction when it comes to getting within that 1 point and being able to vault it forward. They haven't been able to do it. And yet another situation where that's been the case. Now, they're going to have some opportunity this week. They're on the road at Winnipeg, which certainly should be a winnable game. They got a massive game coming up on Thursday against Seattle. So another game against the Kraken. They got San Jose next week. So some of these teams that are right there in front of them, you're going to have a chance to play here in the next couple of weeks here. But it just kind of feels like right now, Joe, this is a team that cannot grab a hold of this thing and gain any traction here. And we've talked about it since January 1st. They've been basically win one, lose one to some degree, or win two, lose two. That's basically how it's gone. And after last week pulling within one, you're back down to 4 points out.
of a playoff spot if you're the Preds.
Yeah. I feel like we may be headed toward, in a couple of weeks, it's not even worth talking about it anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd like to be wrong, but it feels like hanging on by a thread right now at this point. Yeah, I mean, look, you've got tough games on the schedule. You got trips. I mean, Edmonton has been struggling, but Edmonton is obviously still a very good team at home. I mean, you know, these aren't – the Preds have had some good performances and lesser performances, but it just seems unrealistic to me that they're going to be able to string together the kind of hockey that's going to be required to actually get on the right side of things. And because, like you said, we're talking about 2.5 months of treading water.
Yeah.
After an incredible hot, you know, not incredible, but a really strong hot streak to put themselves in position after a terrible start.
Yep. And I say Winnipeg's a winnable game coming up this week. It is. But if they lose, if Winnipeg beats them, Winnipeg hops them in the standings. I mean, they're only 1 point back of the Preds. So you could be, by Wednesday morning, looking at a situation where, you know, not only is it Seattle you're trying to chase down, but you'll then have San Jose, L.A., and Winnipeg all in front of you at that point if you lose that game. So, I mean, it's not looking great right now for the playoff push just in terms of their ability to sustain anything. I mean, they got the win against Seattle last week. And, Joe, I mean, they're up 3-1 in the third period. If you're a Predators fan, you're thinking, all right, well, here they go. Like, they beat Seattle. They're up 3-1 against the worst team in the league. And then you blow that one. You always knew Edmonton on the road was going to be a challenge because it's always a challenge against those guys. And you're sitting here basically at the end of that week not having gained any ground now with the way that this has gone. And it just feels like a similar story here, which I think is for a lot of Predators fans why you look back at the trade deadline and you're like, I mean, what are you doing? Why did you think that this was going to be any different? So, look, there's still time, but there ain't that much time. I mean, they've played 66 games. So you're talking there is 16 games left in the season, and it's going to come quick. I mean, this week, the schedule, this is who they have over the next week here. Winnipeg, Seattle, Vegas, Chicago, San Jose. That's between now and next Tuesday. That's how many games they're playing. It's a lot of games coming up. So, I mean, the picture is going to continue to get a little thicker here just in terms of how you view it. And look, you've got Winnipeg. That's a winnable game. Seattle, you just beat them. You got them at home coming up on Thursday. Vegas is a really good team, obviously, on Saturday. But you got Chicago on Sunday, San Jose. Like, you can put together a streak here. It's not like this is some daunting schedule over the next couple of weeks, but they just haven't been able to do it. So until they do it, I kind of feel like it's probably going to be what it's been, which is them basically treading water. And Joe, if you ask me to guess right now where they'll be this time next week, they'll be about 2 or 3 points out of a playoff spot, because that's what it's been for the last month, basically.
Yeah, it's possible. The condensed schedule, I mean, there's all these games. I mean, it provides opportunity, at least. And like you said, there are winnable games in there. But, yeah, it's hard to expect a lot better at this point. You know, what will it take for them to actually get on a roll?
Yeah, I mean, somebody wondering why Saros didn't start last night. I mean, my guess is it's just the schedule part of it. I understand they had a few days off, but you got – coming up here, just it's every other day, and in some cases, back-to-back. So they've got two back-to-backs coming up to close out the month here. Vegas and Chicago this upcoming weekend, and then the week after that, they got Montreal at home, Tampa on the road. So there's a lot of back-to-backs coming up. So I guess you want your – I mean, the other – like, Onanen lately when he's been in has played okay. Like, he's been pretty good. So I don't have a huge problem with them not starting Saros yesterday, because my guess is he's going to start every game this week. Winnipeg, Seattle, and Vegas coming up. So
yeah, you got to give him a break
at some point. But I understand the thought process there.
You got to give him a break here and there, and yeah, I mean, at some point, which is just about now, pretty much right about now, you need to lean on him heavily, and you know, right, like I mean, if you're going to get on a roll, that's part of the equation, isn't it? It's yeah. Like Saros playing peak Saros.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a big part of it. Keith says, I just hope O'Reilly has a great time the rest of the season and really savors the moment of being in Nashville. After all, that's why we're all here. It's for him. It's from Keith. No hard feelings from the trade deadline.
Yeah. I sense sarcasm, Keith.
I do, too.
So O'Reilly called himself garbage last night. Is that right? Did I get is that
probably
correct?
I mean, I didn't see it, but
someone tweeted that O'Reilly, quote, said garbage about in reference to himself.
That would add up. I've seen him,
which
do
is
it
actually him being kind of easy on himself.
Yeah, it is. I mean, half the time I expect to walk in the locker room after a loss and find him, like, you know, with his toenail with a hammer somewhere in there. Like, hey, calm down, bud. It's gonna be all right.
But yeah, like finding himself.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Barry, I'm gonna Venmo you like $10,000. I suck.
Here's my salary. Yeah. You can have it back. Yeah. No wonder they wanted to keep him around.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah.
They'll close out the road trip coming up tomorrow in Winnipeg, and then they are back at home for five of their next six. So an opportunity coming up at home for the Predators. We'll see if they can run with it. I mean, they're gonna need some of their veterans have dried up a little bit here. And obviously, you know, Svechkov scored last night. That's good to see. But when you're not getting a lot of goal production at the moment from guys like O'Reilly and Forsberg, and Yossi's dried up a little bit, Stamkos dried up a little bit. I mean, it's not a great time for that to be happening when you basically are going to have those guys score or you're just not going to win.
Do you think that obviously they're fighting. Of course they're fighting. But do you think – two things since the trade deadline, just some of the lineup changes that have been necessitated by the deadline, and also just, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a win coming out of the sales a little bit is affecting them?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, it's – I say that. I mean, they went in a big game environment in Seattle when you knew you needed to win it, and they did it. And then they screwed one up in Vancouver the next time out. Like, so
yeah, you got to get those 2 points.
That one's the one that I think right now, like, losing on the road in Edmonton, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily unpredictable to see coming. Screwing the Vancouver up the game the way they did, I know they got a point out of it, but screwing that up the way that they did, they may look back and say, ah, man, like, it's, you can't be letting those points get away.
Yeah.
So we'll see if they can respond to it. But, I mean, right now, like you said, it's been – since the new year, since January 1st, they've basically been treading water. And is that going to change down the stretch here where you got some high-stakes hockey games coming up? We'll see. 615-737-1025, our phone number. A couple moves made by the Titans over the weekend. We will get into that. We got the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 745. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 the game. Come play hooky with 1025 the game this Thursday at Jelly Roll's Goodnight Nashville. And on Friday at Boomba's in East Nashville from noon to 6. You can watch the basketball games with us, enjoy great food, handcrafted beverages, and win prizes as well. NCAA tournament coverage on 102.5 The Game, presented by Toyota, Thompson Machinery, and Pozona MD. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad is coming up. Joe, a couple moves made by the Titans. They have restructured Calvin Ridley's contract, and he will be around in 2026. So after what they did in free agency, bringing in Wandale Robinson and that being the one move at wide receiver, made a lot of sense, I think, from my perspective, to keep Ridley around at that point. That's what they've done, and Ridley going to be a part of the fold here as they move forward. So you've got your 2 fourth-rounders from last year that you feel good about in Io Manor and DK. You've got Ridley. You've got Robinson in the mix, and now the question is, you know, what more could you add to it when it comes to the NFL draft? But what did you make of the decision by the Titans to keep Calvin Ridley in the fold?
I agree with Gentry. I think it's it makes sense. He the best case for it is that he is, you know, he's a big part of the offense. He plays, he's healthy. He adapts quickly to this system. He's a big part of the offense. And, you know, there already was some chemistry built with him and your young quarterback. Why? You already, you know, you lost Chig, which is a guy who also I thought had some pretty good chemistry.
Apparently, Chig's about to be freed up in Washington. He's going to run actual routes.
Is that right?
That's what he said.
Okay. I missed that.
Good to know.
Okay. Interesting.
Apparently, Chig has been some sleeping giant around here. So
he said he didn't run routes?
He said, I mean, I will go find the quote, but he was basically like, yeah, I'm going to actually be used here, so it'll be good.
Hmm, interesting. Okay. Well, hey, I'm going to withhold any sort of judgment on that because based on how things typically go, he's about to have like 68 catches for 950 yards and 9 touchdowns this year. So, yeah. You know. But, no, I like Ridley. I like keeping Ridley. I think it makes sense. You just – and look, you got the two young guys that you hope are on the rise. You've got Wandale Robinson, who you know is going to be, you know, important in this offense. Now, you don't like to field an offense and have a chance to move the ball and score points. You know, you're not desperate to draft a receiver. I'm all for drafting a receiver if there's a good one at 35, and that's the best player at that spot, I'm all for it. And you know, I think at some point in this draft, they're definitely going to draft at least one receiver, right?
I would think so.
And that's the ideal scenario is you get someone who can really grow into being a key part of your team and replace Ridley soon enough. But I think for this year, it's not bad to have another year with him and Cam Ward together.
Yeah, he was talking about the new offense that he's joining in Washington. And one of the things he says was, you know, he'll be able to, quote, you know, actually get to run real routes on the field, end quote. So, apparently the Titans offense has been holding back Jake Okonkwo.
That's multiple offenses.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Vrabel and Callahan.
Todd Downing didn't let him, didn't let him run. Just go out like a couple yards and stand there, okay? Yeah. Turn around.
They kind of used him in like the Jonnu role, right? Jonnu Smith didn't really run a whole lot of real routes.
Well, I mean, they ran
a lot of screens, little bubbles, get the ball to his hands and let him do some yak.
The Titans would probably say, you know, you could probably run some more routes if we felt anywhere good about you being able to block in there so you could act like you're going to, you know, maybe a little versatility to you. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like Chig and Jonnu and whoever. I mean, I definitely saw them run routes. I know I saw that with my own two eyes. Like, or, you know, settle into a hole in a zone. I mean, I don't know.
Look, it's the Titans.
Hey,
I
can't wait to see the route running, Chig.
I guess we should leave the door open for him going to Washington and just being really good.
Exactly.
I don't know. I've watched Chig Okonkwo and what he is, which is a fine player. Hmm. I mean, he had 56 catches for 560 yards, but that to me is about what he is, which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
We'll see.
I don't think he's going to go to Washington and he's going to turn into like some 95-catch guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, but I mean,
I wish him
Malik Willis is about to take over the whole NFL, so I'm not,
true.
You know, A-Dub Wright on the YouTube's like, it's hard to run routes when the QB doesn't have time to throw. I agree. There is that, too. That's a problem. He also says they're keeping Ridley because they know Wandale was a waste of money. Boy, I hope they don't have buyer's remorse like 2 days after signing Wandale Robinson.
Yeah, and Ravens. You should have traded for him, and you could just get out of it if you're the Titans.
Yeah.
Just traded for him back in February. I don't know if we want to do this. The other move, Legarius Sneed released. So not that that is some surprise, Joe, but Legarius Sneed has been released. And at the end of it, I mean, when you factor in what they gave up to get him, how much they paid him, and what they actually got out of him, one of the worst moves in the history of the franchise. There's no doubt. It's pretty awful.
Wow, that is a big statement.
I mean, one of. I'm not saying it's the absolute worst, but it's one of.
It's bad.
I mean, it's inarguably one of the worst moves in the history of the franchise.
I would now like to read I'd like to read a top 10 list. What are the obvious worst moves? I mean, trading AJ Brown is
AJ Brown's
is
up there.
Is that number one?
It's got to be up there for sure. I mean, in with the benefit of hindsight, drafting Isaiah Wilson where they drafted him, it's got to be up there.
Yeah, there's some draft. I mean
you put together three drafts in a row, really.
Yeah. That's the drafts, the trades, maybe giving Haynesworth the big deal, I guess.
Well, I mean,
or no, they didn't give him the big deal. He went to Washington.
He was fine here.
He was great here. They let him go. Yeah. That's right. No, that's my bad. What else comes to mind?
I mean, I'd have to go through the entire history, but
I mean, obviously, there's some bad draft picks.
I mean, obviously, like
Vince Young or whatever.
This was more salary cap related, but like when they gutted everything and you saw D. Mace walking out the door and Samari Roll walking out the door and McNair and all that other stuff, but that's kind of a different part of this.
Yeah, and also it was a different cap era then, too.
It's pretty
still
bad,
real.
Man.
Still real.
Yeah.
But, yeah, different era.
But they get 12 games out of Legarius Sneed?
I believe that is what I saw,
12 games. Ended up on IR both years. He did pass the physical on the way out, so that's good. I saw
good for him.
I saw over the weekend there was like this Green Bay Packers fan page. It was like, oh, an opportunity has come up. You could go get Snead. And I was like, do not. Do not do that. Leave him alone.
That's a great example of like everyone knows the name. He has been good.
Yeah.
Get excited. It was like, you got to be like, understand what has just happened with this guy. He can't play anymore.
I'm interested to see where he ends up. I mean, I assume he's going to end up somewhere on a very cheap deal, but I don't know, man. Like, does he have anything left?
If he
played this past year, he was okay. Like, yeah, that game against the Rams, he had some moments where he looked pretty good, but
if he's on the field, he's okay, but like, if I'm a team out there, it would be a very low.
Yeah.
It's like a guy who can help you some, maybe. So I'm not paying much for that.
Not people voting for the Julio trade.
Yeah. It's interesting. But yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, a second-round pick, and it obviously didn't work out. I still like some of these are like in the moment of the Julio trade, I was for it. Because as far as we knew, he still had tread on the tires.
Yeah.
In the moment on the A.J. Brown trade, oh, my God, what are you doing? Right?
Yeah.
They're a little different. But, yeah, ultimately it's all with hindsight.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where he ends up. But the L'Jarius Sneed saga has come to an end with the Tennessee Titans there. So, good riddance. I mean, talk about, you know. What'd he end up with? $51.5 million guaranteed. He got $51.5 million to play football for the Titans. And think of what they got back for that. It's just awful.
And it's still wild, too.
Just awful.
Mike Borgonzi was cackling along with the rest of the Chiefs front office on the one end of the deal. And now he's finally swept it out of the building on the other end of the deal.
Yep. So that part of it is now gone for the Titans. You know, corner, they've obviously addressed here. They could probably still, Joe, at some point in the draft, not high in the draft, but at some point in the draft, probably use another one. So I'm interested to see what that looks like. I mean, Marcus Harris probably slots in right now, I guess, is your fourth guy. So that's much better than what it was looking like earlier in the offseason, but probably could still use another body there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you can find one. I mean, look, you can – if you're looking for a fifth corner, you can actually do fine with a UDFA. Yeah. You're okay there. Someone throwing out Conklin on that. You know, Conklin, you got to remember, too, Conklin from here, you know, he already had the ACL here. I think he got another ACL since he's left. So, in the short term, that did hurt them.
And he's out there, too. I think he's available.
There you go. But, I mean – yeah, the problem is that leads to Isaiah Wilson.
Yep.
So if you combo Conklin and Isaiah Wilson, then I'm with you. I think that if you can do it that way, because obviously if they sign him, they never draft Isaiah Wilson. They draft somebody else. There's a chain reaction of stuff that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Interested to see where he ends up. There's also a vote for Vic Beasley. The Vic Beasley one was bad, but, I mean, think about – L'Jarius Sneed and the money that they gave and the third round pick that you gave up that nobody else was really willing to do, and this is what you got back for it. I'm telling you, man, like when you really start to go through them, it's one of the worst moves they've ever made.
Right, like Vic Beasley is, they didn't pay him that much. It's a signing, but yeah. When you give up draft capital, and then you also pay a lot for like nothing.
Yeah,
that immediately is a contender.
I mean, I would agree AJ is the worst, right? Like, AJ is going to be tough to top.
Yeah, because as someone pointed out in the YouTube chat, like, it's also, again, the chain reaction of that. That is why you end up moving on ultimately from your coach, who Titans fans mostly wish they had as a coach.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Corey Curtis with us at 8 o'clock. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Sometimes it does need to be violence, okay?
Rex Road, you said we were going to lose, you jerk.
I'm a pig in slop.
You can't stay away from shellfish, meat, and meat.
There was a lot of meat, you know what I mean? And, of course, I ate all of it. For all you casuals who are kind of dipping your toe in the water, you know?
A pineapple? I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, I'm a big swinger.
Look pretty for the cameras.
I do not think it's my camera.
Yeah, I mean, someone in the SEC thinks I'm hot.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joseph, who was a TV star all weekend long, the floor is yours.
Well, actually, it was nice. On Saturday, I got moved a little bit to the right, which was nice. Now, maybe it was just too much sexiness, you know, for everybody. It's like, you know, let's tone it down a little bit, folks. Let's tone it down. This is a family show. And then yesterday, I was actually like up on the front row right next to the Vanderbilt radios, mm-hmm. like me, Teresa, and Kyle Tucker over there, which was totally away from the camera, so that was nice. I am going to talk a little bit about that tournament, not about my eating. I did okay the rest of the weekend. I tried to keep it, you know, vegetables, fruits. They did have a little charcuterie board yesterday. Had a little bit of cheese off that. Okay, fine. I did have a few little chicken nuggets and dipped them in honey mustard, but like not bad. So that part of it was fine. The thing that, I don't know, for people who did watch the SEC tournament, there may have been something that you noticed, and I don't have the time all figured out, but we got a real issue in this sport, and it's, you know, I want to give the SEC credit in particular. Garth Glissman is the commissioner for basketball. He used to be in the NBA. He's the one who put together the rule that went into effect this year, which is a very good rule for college basketball. It is the a challenge rule. So we can stop. I mean, for people who don't remember, just a year ago, it got so unbearable with every single thing being reviewed.
Yep.
Every single thing being reviewed. There was a Michigan-Wisconsin Big Ten tournament game last year. Like, there were just like seven or eight kind of close out-of-bounds things, and they reviewed every single one, and it's like, make a call and let's go. This is terrible. So they put in the challenge system. Great. Now, yes, still late in the game. I mean, officials can review things, but for the most part, it's like, if you have a challenge, we made a call, and if you're out of challenges, okay, play on. But what happened this year? I don't know why this became a thing, because actually it's been in the rule books, but now we have the appeals. So you have challenges, but now you have the appeals, and it's been crazy in the SEC in particular. I think other leagues have seen it. I've seen it in other leagues, but it is crazy in this league, which is, hey, on that play 3 plays ago, I think their guy hooked and held our guy. Can you go look at that? I want to appeal that. I think that happened. How many times did it happen? I covered 15 games at the SEC tournament. I should have kept track of this. That happened 22 times? I don't know. It felt like it. Maybe that's a little high. It's absurd. And almost all of them get denied. I mean, Todd Golden, and by the way, sitting across the court from Todd Golden, calm down, bro. It's not that deep. You're a basketball coach. Calm down. I mean, that guy.
Intense.
That guy is. And boy, does he talk some trash, too. Did you guys see the video of Todd Golden and Mark Pope?
Yeah,
and
little, I did.
Yeah. So he flips out. He appeals the game. The thing is, Vanderbilt. Everybody watches the replay. No, nothing there. Like their arms got hooked. Like their arms were, excuse me, linked for a second. And that happens all the time. No, appeal denied. He lost his crap. Like, Todd, we're all watching the replay. There's nothing there. We have to get rid of this. This is gross. We were so close. We had the game cut down. We had all the reviews done. Challenge system, great. Now let's have appeals all the time. If a hook and hold is dangerous and it hurts someone, the refs will see it. Otherwise, we do not need to go back and say, oh, did he get his arm hooked in there a little bit? These things happen. If someone yanks and actually hurts someone, well, then that's a big deal, and you deal with it. You get rid of the appeals, no more. And by the way, Garth Glissman, the SEC, have already proposed this, so let's hope this goes through. I think the challenge system in college, I think that it should just go ahead and include fouls. And then this can be part of the challenge system. If you want to use a challenge because you think they missed a hook and hold, okay, that's a challenge. You get one. If you get it right, you get a second. That's it. We have to go to this. It's ridiculous. The game is so good right now. It's been an incredible year for college basketball. The ratings have been fantastic. The game is fun to watch. The offense is, like, off the charts. We get the challenge system, and now we have these dudes appealing all the time. Like, I just desperately need this game to grind to a halt as much as possible, even though I'm a coach and, like, I should want the game to be watchable.
Just try enough. They can't get out of their own way. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I will agree with you. I mean, as you know, casual would probably be the best way to describe me as a college basketball fan. Enjoyed watching some of the tournament this weekend, and now my real week of college basketball fandom begins. I'm really looking forward to the tournament coming up this
welcome.
Week.
Welcome.
The more offense, the better. Give me the offense. Let's not slow this thing down with any of these appeals. Let's get it going. I mean, as we have also discussed before, Joe, I would think that basketball, probably the hardest game to officiate. Probably.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Hockey's not easy either. Football, not easy. Basketball, difficult to officiate. So you're going to miss some stuff. But
baseball easy?
I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier than basketball.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know.
Yeah, you got 10 dudes all mixed up with each other. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Although some of the ball and strike calls these behind the plate umpires miss, you'd think it's pretty difficult. It's like, good grief, man.
I just figured I'd get you ripping
6 feet
baseball.
Off the plate. What are we doing? How's that a strike? Anyway, but, you know, it's everything you just said is perfect. It's a great year for college basketball. I'm hoping it's a great tournament coming up. It would be a shame for the tournament to just be an absolute dud. I mean, how often is the tournament a dud? Very rarely. One thing that is interesting, Joe, and we've talked about this, you know, with the NIL situation being what it is, and this has been a big talking point the last couple of years in the tournament, are we going to see fewer and fewer upsets as time goes on? That, for this tournament, will be something that I'm monitoring very closely here. What's that going to look like?
Yeah, well, and the thing is, I mean, I hope not. I hope we get some great ones. But that's another thing about, just remember, if you like upsets in the NCAA tournament, you don't want Belmont to get upset in the Missouri Valley tournament. You don't want Yale to get upset in the Ivy League tournament. You know, that's some of the problem. March Madness has started already, which is great, and we had some incredible conference tournament games and outcomes. But also, again, it's like I'd love to see Belmont. Belmont right now would be a 12. That's exactly what they'd be. They'd be a problem for somebody. I promise you. And same with Yale. Yale would be a 12. They'd be a problem for somebody. So, but, yeah, like, I hope we don't have an all-one seed Final Four. We had it last year, which is the second time ever, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want this to become where that becomes, like, you know, 3 out of every 5 years we have all the one seeds. I hope that's not where we're going.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next for his weekly visit. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.